CloudEmpress.com. Today's episode of RTFM is brought to you by Cloud Empress, the lands of life and death, currently on Kickstarter. If you have the money to back this and you haven't, I don't know. This is honestly a great game. Cloud Empress is super cool. It's doing interesting things in the spaces of the mothership realm, the spaces of world building as playable lore, the spaces of like formal published physical goods. I love this game. I want to play it real bad, and I want you to go to cloudempress.com and back it. Please. I felt bad about how harsh I got. Let's get into the episode.
You're gonna have to get comfy with having strong opinions this time.
Yes. Today's episode is... Oh, I'm Aaron. Do we do this anymore? We don't have a guest, so it's like just the two of us.
I guess it has just been the two of us for a while now, eh?
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm Aaron this time.
All right. You've entered your soft Aaron phase.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
We are covering Vice and Violence by Rapscallion. You can find this game for free. It's a work in progress. It's still being made, but you can find the current state of it as a free PDF. If you still are on Twitter, at twitter.com/rapscallion_art, or at patreon.com/rapscallionVNS. Just a heads up, don't do this at work. I think we mentioned it last time, and maybe this is a good time to, you know, mention a general content warning of... there's going to be some nudity and sex in this book the second you look at it.
Not on the podcast, but we will be talking about these things.
I'm fully clothed for once during recording.
I'm not, but that's fine.
Yeah, yeah. Getting in the groove.
Our old gimmicks are back. I am not wearing a shirt.
This is like an explicitly erotic fantasy role-playing game. It takes a lot of the conceits of, you know, traditional D&D and fantasy roleplay and turns them horny. I feel like that's all the summary you kind of need before we get into details.
It's the best fantasy roleplaying game in the world.
I sent you almost that exact message earlier today.
I'm almost not joking. I feel like it's disappointing that you're fully clothed because I did not intentionally do this, but I am dressed appropriate to my gender according to this book. There are no shirts. If you are a mask presenting person, you are not allowed to wear shirts. That is forbidden in the land of vice and violence.
Where do we want to start with this one? Oh man, I read?
Yes. Yes,
you a can. Quote that I think kind of distills a lot of what this game is going for.
100%.
In the world of mundane, sex is a great way to distract guards, get discounts at stores and taverns, blackmail officials, escape from prison, prove your devotion to a cult, and occasionally express love between two people. I'm surprised they put two people and not two or more people. It's good.
I feel like...
Go ahead.
Well, I just feel like the first thing to chat about is the lewd level, because this game is really sex forward.
Yes.
But it is more so like nudity and weird body forward, actually, I feel. But it starts off like right off the bat with like, welcome, like page two, welcome to Vice and Violence, the lewd level. And it is... just how much lewdness do you want in your game?
And it starts at zero, which is just like, that is probably less sexual than the Dungeons and Dragons movie.
It's very funny
to read this book full of drawings of nude characters and be like, I think I want to play this at lewd level zero.
But maybe that's also like the game's probably still good. I'm sure we'll get into this. I should read the lewd levels because I feel like they are a fundamental design element of this game. So lewd level one is for players that wish to avoid actively participating in the more erotic side of V&V. The lewd stuff acts as set dressing, CD brothels, impractical armor, phallic fungus, but players aren't seducing guards to distract them with back alley blowjobs or having orgies in the wilderness, which boring, but also fine.
But mood that's levels. Coming from you, who grew up having an orgy in the wilderness.
Yeah. I'm less experienced at back alley blowjobs, but you know, I'm open to leveling up. Lewd level two, the way Vice and Violence is designed to be played, an erotic slapstick adventure where players will flirt with storekeepers for discounts, visit brothels, seduce guards, and so on, while fighting monsters and malcontents for money and glory. I like that not only is there this lewd level, but there's like, this is what the game is meant to do. You can do different things with it, right. But if you want to like meet it where it's living, that's it. And then lewd level three. It's like default
difficulty levels in video
games. Yeah. Lewd level three. For players who'd like to focus on the saucy content over the swashbuckling adventure game, use this strange fantasy world as a setting for erotic role playing. And then it says, remember, if you'd like to explore themes beyond the scope of this squishy, lighthearted game, have a clear and respectful conversation with your players beforehand.
Maybe that's important to say a bit more, is like, this is a super horny game. It is also very clear about comedic. Setting boundaries.
Yeah.
Very welcoming to a variety of sexual interests and approaches. The art displays a pretty good variety of body types as well.
Oh yeah, we're gonna have a big convo. Well, I feel like we can chat about gender and bodies and stuff right off the bat if we wanted.
Yeah,
it's a big part of it.
Yes, and so like we're saying, I think if this, and I mean this game was written 10 years ago and 20 years ago and 30 years ago, like stuff like this always crops up. I've seen so many bad versions of this game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this one is like, this is great. It's welcoming. I feel invited.
Yeah. And I feel like part of that is the art style, which probably is like my impression of the person who made this is that they are an artist first, like a visual artist first.
I think that's true.
The role-playing game kind of, I have no idea how it came about. But so much of this game is like communicated through its art. Every page is like full art. The text takes up significantly less space than the art.
The art is really good.
It's fucking fabulous.
I would love to try to describe it if that's okay.
Please do.
It takes a lot of cues from like traditional fantasy art. It's done in a sort of animation style. A lot of the coloring is kind of glowing or luminescent. But quickly goes into a crazy variety. There's like Morrowind adjacent stuff. There's lots of weird bugs. Like I said, the body types, there's a decent variety of them. And like probably is drawing from a big tradition of erotic art that I am maybe less familiar with, but like sometimes the art is a character standing there. Often the art is some people engaging in some sexual acts, but it's all really clear. Like it's cartooning in the way that you would describe a good comic. Like you know what's going on in any given image. You can tell the foreground from the background. It's amazing. It's like some of just that this person is putting out this art and also putting out one of the cooler RPGs that I've read in the last couple of years blows my mind.
Yeah, it definitely. So fun. I feel like there is less people having sex art than you might think going into it. This yes. is also a real ass role playing game like that. Like, I feel like I just want to like commend that, comment on it, and because it's commendable right at the beginning, because like, it is a fully functioning role-playing game that is not like a role-playing game that is hiding behind the art. You know, right. like there isn't, it is, and it's also it is not a good just, role-playing game.
It's not just 5e. Exactly. Yeah. yeah. There's like, it's auto hit mechanics, like Into the Odd. There's lots of kind of scene setting and downtime that is adjacent to Blaze in the Dark or Firebrand style stuff.
The downtime is cool as shit.
The downtime is so good.
There's a lot of generative stuff within the book. Yes.
The random encounters, a lot of them are full page. Like each encounter is a full page with a piece of art that you could literally show the players. And then like a description of what the GM needs to know. It's the DM in here, which is the dungeon master, the danger master or dat motherfucker, which is very funny. But like a lot of the random encounters are full page things for the single encounter. And then like, here's what they see. Here are some tables for you to roll on for like the motivations of this character or the secrets they're hiding or something like that. Like they are their own little mini games for both the DM and the players. It's really cool mechanics. The spells are really cool. The way you level up, there are multiple ways to advance your skills that are all really interesting.
A bunch of them have like, I mean, we can talk about the mechanics. The mechanics are good. A bunch of the ways you level up or a bunch of the like character classes have their own like pseudo mini games. Some of them full mini games involved.
Yeah. So you start as you roll for a species. You roll for everything, which I always love. There are like 12 different species. You roll for two little quirks for the species. And some of them are like, oh, I got goblin and there's a piece missing out of my ear where a cat got me once. And then another one of them is just like, I love big cocks.
I love it so much. The traits. So like, I will say this game has a bunch, they are called races and that might upset some folks. I think they function like species. And I kind of think that maybe that would be a better language choice. However, the traits that you roll for them are so hilarious. And they're not all sexy either. Like one of the goblin ones.
Some are just like, I got bonked in the head and don't remember where I grew up.
Yeah. And one of the goblin ones is I call everyone champ. And if that isn't like a whole character, like that. they're really, really great. Even like, again, so much of this is like, even if you weren't playing the sexy version, like I joked about it being boring, but I think you could if you don't want to describe sexual activity, but you do want to play a kind of comedic world where sex exists, I think there is a really fun, like I would play that game with people that I don't know super well, you know, right. Whereas like if I was going to play it as intended, I'd want to select the group pretty right. strongly.
Loot level 2 is not a con game.
Yes. Yeah. Whereas like loot level 1, like, could yeah. be maybe
if I'm or a at big least bad could con, be like I would go people for that. Later.
yeah 100% like would play in a Discord with people like not so you have, sorry I totally cut you off, goblins, dragon king, elves, humans, orcs, dwarfs, centaurs, satyrs, dwellers, which are dwarf elf.
Right, and then you get into like the human elf, Realmers. The dwarf elf, the human dwarf, right, they mix them all up. The satyrs are human centaurs or dwarfs,
otherlings that are kind of just like weird guys.
Yeah, the funkiest of little dudes.
I think there's something interesting happening in this game that like a lot of the things that I would be really critical of in D&D or a D&D inspired or an OSR game or whatever, I can see functioning as kind of like fodder for titillation here. And that feels like a little bit of an allowance.
You know, I want to do a little more mechanical talk of like character creation and stuff, but I do want to get into like the Gygaxian naturalism of this world and how funny it is if you base your Gygaxian naturalism on horny and sex instead of on race science or whatever weird shit Gary Gygax was on. Start with a race. There are four stats that range from -2 to +1. You will roll a d20 sometimes to add or subtract those, but not attacks, which is awesome, and not some spells. A lot of stuff you can just do, you're good at. But everyone starts as like no class. You're like fresh idiots into this life. And then you gain class abilities during downtime. So after an adventure, you might say, I'm going to spend my downtime at the arena. I'm going to learn some little combat tricks. And then once I learn enough combat tricks, I can become a fighter and learn these more powerful fighter traits. Or I'm going to spend my downtime at the wizard tower and learn some spells. Or I become a bard. Or I become an erotic dancer, which is like an awesome class.
Extremely good. Yeah. And this downtime happens in between sessions. Like, it is explicit that like this is stuff that is going right. on in the background of the game.
Yeah, it's an explicitly like West Marches style game where you go on an adventure and then in between adventures you pick your downtime stuff. And sometimes that might influence the start of the next adventure, but you can kind of just do this on your own, which is amazing. Like, that is what old D&D was, right? Like, the time that passed between sessions was also time that passed in the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the like OSR-ness of this game is amazing. There's very clear, appealing rules for tracking time and travel.
Mm-hmm.
There's procedures for generating stuff. It's crazy. Like, I don't know if this person is super well read in OSR games or just came to this stuff naturally, but it's really good.
Yeah. Also, it has my favorite thing, which is a spell effects, like a mildly chaotic spell failure table.
Fail, yeah.
Which is actually really like neatly done in that it's a DC system, right? So like you're running a difficulty class and the DC for spells is 12, and if you roll under a 12, each individual number that you could roll is an effect on a table,
right? An 11 is okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not quite a success. Down to I think 1 and 2 are both you die.
Yeah, you explode.
But then as you level up in Wizard, you can remove the highest of those effects. So you can turn an 11 into success and then a 10. And then there are also like items that you can get that shunt off or cancel out those effects.
Yeah, wizard staff that I think you have to be scantily clad to use or something. There's a lot of staff, things.
But then there's also a magic item that will absorb it for each failure you roll, but then your genitals grow.
Yes.
Each time you fail.
There are so many magical items. A note, this book is 169 pages, and that is double pages. So it is like it is sitting at the like 250 page. They're small and they're text light, so they're not like a full.
Right. And some of the pages in my PDF are single pages and some are spreads, but yeah, I would say, yeah,
work in progress.
It hangs out between 200 and 300 pages for sure.
Which is wild that we both are like, yes, this one. It's the singular
right.
book.
Even a broken clock is right twice a day.
Yeah.
Even a busted ass long RPG is good once every 3 years or however long we've
been. Yeah, it's this one. This is the metric. If you're giving me 300 pages, you better be better than this game.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's also things like status effects. Like there is so much minutia present for like,
but it's not too heavy. Right. And the rules are always like kind of fun and engaging, right? Like,
yeah.
Because this lets itself be goofy and horny and fun, it's never like, oh no, I got poisoned. It's like, oh, you're poisoned. You can fix it by taking an antidote or by getting drunk. And it's like, yeah. Oh, I want to get drunk. Like,
also,
all of these weird minutia things drive you into making fun or weird choices as a player, which is amazing.
And many of the status effects, like, or many of the side effects of encountering like a trap or a monster or whatever is getting kicked out horny and filthy, which is like very funny. Right. Like, filthy
which is a
like,
state you probably want your character to be in this game anyway.
Yes. And filthy is like, you could be covered in mud or blood, or you also could be covered in semen and slime.
Yeah.
This is, yeah. Yeah, it's great. The time tracking I thought was hilarious because I wasn't expecting there to be like, here's a time tracking grid for every 15 minute segment of a day. It's optional. It's not, you know, like time management yeah. is like very clearly,
but it's well done. And it's given important. A clear little track that the GM can use, which like to me is much more inviting than you have to track time across these next 300 pages. We'll randomly mention how much time something will take. Like, this is all on one page. There's a little checkbox you can use.
Yeah, it's just the same with like distance. Like, distance is done descriptively, right? Adjacent, nearby, far, yes. and distant. Yeah. And so like you have the it's all in there. Everything you could want from a fantasy RPG, including all of the elaborate character choices, all of the leveling, all of the non-combat negative. Like, that's kind of how I think of status effects, is like, if you didn't want the only negative to be combat, then you have all these other ways to do it via like exertion, or when you die, you can get turned into a zombie because there's a very big zombie bit.
Yeah, let's talk about this. Let's talk about the world. So
there's so much world.
In a world, this is, again, I'm a lore hater. I love this lore. I do wish I could edit it a little bit and make it a bit more punchy and evocative.
I wish the book was just split. Like, layout-wise, I wish the lore was kind of... because it goes, like, it alternates between lore and I wish there was, like, a world book.
That right. I also could... think there are ways to incorporate it, like, there's stuff about dwarfs. Instead of mentioning that in a paragraph in the world creation thing, you put it under dwarf in character creation or whatever.
But again, work in progress. I think these pages, I think this is getting added to, as in like, I made a new page, I put it in the book, you know, like right. It's not.
I rearranged some of the stuff. Here's the new version. Mm-hmm. So a few things about this world. The gods are terrible, giant mollusk beings that live on the moon and look down on people and try to fuck with them. That's important step
one. And failed to destroy the world, right?
Step two, they tried to destroy the world by one of their ways was by merging humans with their livestock, and thus the invention of centaurs, which means the centaurs are not just horses, but also cows, goats, other ungulates, which means there's no more of those animals left. So it's hard to find meat and milk in this world because the gods
it would
merged.
Be if we didn't have
it,
dairy girls.
It would be. And so now people eat bugs and they drink milk out of people. And there are spells to give people milk memories. But it's not just women. Like, it's very clear about, like, you can cast a spell on yourself and generate milk, which has this specific effect. The dwarves came up from a failed world that the gods tried to destroy by building a new world on top of it. And they're like, hey, did you hear about these fucking asshole gods? We gotta get them. And then there was a worldwide hootenanny where all the ruling classes were like overthrown and destroyed. The gods were deprived of their magic. And now everyone's just wandering around trying to survive and get down with each other.
Yes. And it also, like, this world building conceit, I guess, is a little bit to like get rid of some of the bad default, like, oh, what you think of as the ruling class kind of got wiped out. There is still like a new ruling class like picking up, so that there is some kind of like power dynamic for you as players to fight against. But like, they comment on all the like great empires being in the old world and right. being destroyed in the and not necessarily present in the new world. So everything's a little bit more like chaotic and less hierarchical.
But also free. It's like that book, Why Women Have Better Sex Under Socialism. Like, so much of this, I think, is done in service to making the sex in this game fun. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm sure you've seen how people will say like, porn takes place in a fictional universe where there are no pregnancies unless you want them and no venereal diseases. Like, this is a very similar thing of like, we want sex to be fun. How do we make that happen? Here are some world building elements to it, which is like that Gygaxian naturalism, which then makes like kind of these half races less weird because everyone's just having sex and getting down together. And it makes sense that there's a mixing pot.
Yes, like, and no... I think the description, like the desire to have differentiated bodies associated with these species is for the ability to like categorically eroticize, I think. There's like this weird thing that like dwarfs makes it sound bad, but like that makes it sound bad, but that's not really what I mean. But that's what I mean, right? Like, dwarfs have big butts, like which is the, there's this funny thing where it's like, well, I want to be a dwarf fucker or whatever.
Yeah.
And or like, what are the ones with the really big ears? Those really big ears.
There is a lot of talk of ears in this game. Well, you know, satyrs, kind of, the males like have bigger ears,
right?
No, it is. It's just a funny, like, it is funny what there is an explicit, like, here's how you do vor. You know, it's funny what kinks get mechanized or rules mentioned and which ones are up to player, whatever, discretion. For every time the rules are like, dwarfs have big butts, there's also just like, but sometimes they don't. Or here's how to be someone with a big butt that isn't a dwarf. Like, it never latches the horse to the wagon in such a strong way that you can't just be like, I'm doing something else with my person. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It weirdly reminds me of Delicious in Dungeon as far as like, I'm going to take all these things that we expect from these genres of fantasy and sex romp, and I'm going to like show them to you and go, haha, isn't this fun? And then I'm going to show you why it all makes sense logically and it's all interconnected. And I think that is a cool skill.
Yeah, I think I want to play the fantasy RPG that combines Vice and Violence and Delicious and Dungeon, right? Like, that isn't just like, we're going to go murder everybody. It is like, oh, can we find some weird food? Because we're on this like epic quest. And then can we also maybe like, why is everybody here super sexy? Is that, should we also maybe just bang some folks as opposed to just doing a murder?
Also, you know, in here, there's the forage downtime action. There is, and there's like spells to make animals meteor. And
stuff. There are spells to meteor? Make animals
meteor. You said meteor. Yeah.
That's not what I thought meteor was gonna mean in that moment. It was right. Like a weird like, oh, my expectations of this are being inverted because you said meteor, but you literally mean for eating.
There's cooking monsters, and it's just, it's funny because it's like this old school stuff, right, of like foraging and making sure you have light in the dungeon, but it also directly appeals to every modern D&D group I've ever had, where it's about like, you're going to want to tame this animal. You're going to want to tame every animal you ever see.
Yeah, thus, you want to have a good dog.
Thus, we have tameable numbers for every animal in here. Oh, you're going to want to talk down every bad guy you ever meet. We have explicitly divided bad guys into can be reasoned with, can't be reasoned with. We have a fun way to engage with reasoning with a bad guy that ranges from talking to them to having sex with them. But here are the ways to make them nonviolent toward you. It's great. It's a great game.
Yeah, they go really deep on disposition, which is kind of like a little bit morale-ish. But
yeah, like reaction roles from original D&D and stuff.
But also like has to be a certain level for you to be able to like have sex with folks. Like there's this like, there's a little bit of gating that like being creepy. With the sex stuff, because also, okay, there are rules for sex. there are you roll for sex. You can roll for sex. And one of the things that I really like is that the first step is you will roll a d10 plus hotness to determine how eager you are. And if you are not,
is it how eager you are or how eager the other person is? I was unclear on this.
Maybe both. Regardless, if you're not eager, it doesn't happen. You don't go past step one.
Yeah. Which is fun. I have days like that. We all have days like that. I don't know.
I also have days where I'm like, maybe sex. And then I think about the reality of it. And I'm like, no. Not eager today.
My eagerness level is too low.
Yeah. Conceptually into it. No. So. And then you go to round two. If you get above a 6 on your eagerness roll, which is the time taken. You roll a d20, and that determines how much you heal, because sex is how you heal your hit points.
There are other ways, but it is one of the ways.
It seems like the most common way. And then you go on to step three, which is the quality, and you roll d20 plus hotness, and that can revive some exertion, which is like a thing you can use to like...
It's like your hero like points it's a power to like up, yeah. succeed on a roll,
And then... You go on to step four, which is the time resting. You roll a d20, and that's you can gain some spell uses back. So if you have like a really good time, you can come out of it like super powered.
Healed up, exertion leveled for the next, you know, however many days, and also you've re-memorized your spells.
Also, at the bottom here, there's this little, if you're using sex to distract a target, such as a guard, you can skip the time taken and quality rolls and use the time resting roll to indicate how long the target will be out of action. Distracting sex takes 20 minutes and provides no restorative benefits to the player performing the act.
Here's my favorite part. Here's my favorite part.
I knew it. It's assumed you're doing hand and mouth stuff rather than the full act when distracting a target. You have places to be. There is something that is never not funny about sex being described as hand and mouth stuff. There's something, I don't know, it gets me every time.
It's really good.
Yeah.
You have places to be.
True. Yeah. I also think that, like, I could 100% see playing this game and largely being like, I want to fuck the guard. And then that just being the extent to which sex plays in. Like, still sex being kind of ever present, but not being, like, super descriptive.
Right. You're not describing it. You're using these mechanics to roll and be awesome, I distracted the guard.
And then, like, chuckling about it, right? Like, hilarious. Remember that time I fucked that guard or whatever? Oh, my God, is it the same guard? Did they remember me? Did I do an embarrassing hand and mouth stuff? Whatever. Like, there is, like, a lot of fun that can be had there that isn't you are playing out something really descriptive.
Rules elide, right? Like, we use these rules to elide these things that maybe we don't have the mastery of, such as in combat. That's why I roll for combat, because I don't know how to swing a sword in real life.
I do not know how to seduce a guard.
I would never seduce a cop. And so it's not that I don't know how, it's that I refuse to learn.
There are other kinds of guards. Maybe a bouncer, a nightclub.
Gatekeepers, intellectual gatekeepers.
Yeah. There's lots of... Yeah. I still don't know how to do it any other ways, but it's fine. You also get vices. The vices are very funny. There's like a downside of things that can happen is you can develop a vice. One of the vices is monogamous.
Very good.
Which means you won't have sex with NPCs.
Which is like a huge blow to your ability. If you're trying to min-max this game, it's just like, how am I supposed to get by these guards? How am I supposed to get out of prison right now?
You can also get chronic horniness, which means you develop the horny condition every 12 hours.
Nightly jerker.
Because horniness can be solved by having sex or by spending 30 minutes curing yourself. It is clear.
Funny. Again.
But also, I really like the milk drinker. Only drinks milk. They're just all so funny. Like in the playing of a like comedy fantasy game, all of these would just be hilarious in play.
Right, like they are a little limiting, but they don't... It's not like you lose a turn in combat, right? Like it's not... They limit you in a way that like maybe directs you into a different way of acting than you would have done before, but it's never just like, oh, you can't do this now. You can't act. You do nothing. It's all like you have to do this other weird thing or you have to figure out, you know. It's a good game.
Maybe that's the moment to transition. Not transition, but to talk about.
I set you up on this one.
To talk about the thing that I think this game does that would really irritate people, which is that like it. There is. It does do the thing that people have talked about hating in D&T a lot, that is like charm, control, seduce, right? Like these type of actions that are not under your control, where your character, something happens to your character becomes motivated to do something or whatever that isn't necessarily chosen by you, that may have a sexual tinge to it, which is like the thing that people hate in D&D, right? Like notoriously the charm spell in D&D or whatever.
Right. Or they did
removes
like the
my
love,
autonomy.
The love priest, and part of that was they can cast charm or whatever.
Yeah. And people have a very hard time with that. I have a hard time with that being like a default thing that doesn't get talked about. Like I don't necessarily want to be like sex charmed by a con GM or whatever. right? Like to me it's contextual.
That's a great Chuck Tingle.
Yeah, right.
But sex charmed by a con DM and yeah.
Like, I always think it's kind of this interesting thing where I have been in games where that has come up and it has been really unfortunate. And usually it is the moment at which I realize I'm playing games with people I don't want to play games with, right? It is not the charm spell that I have a problem with. It is how it gets used, enlightening me to the fact that I'm playing with a shit person. And those are different things, right? Like, my problem is not the mechanic. My problem is that the mechanic can be used to make something gross, but a lot of mechanics can be used to make something gross.
I mean, attack rolls can be used to describe some distressing, disgusting violence.
Yes. And like, I'm playing with a group of people, all of whom can make choices about what they're describing and what they're doing. And all of those things could be choices that make me unhappy in one shape, one way, shape, or form. I think, like, obviously, again, it is, everything's always different when sex is involved. But this has a lot of, you know, there's a lot of traps that do result in you being horny. And horniness can only be cured via doing something sexy, you know?
But it can be alone.
It can be alone. And there are charm spells, right? There are, like, there is being charmed here. This is because these things function within the realm. This is the difference, right? This is why I feel differently about having all the, like, species and they're having their specific abilities and traits and whatever linked to them. And things like charm spells and things like sex mechanics, because even the sex mechanic, like, you're rolling whether you're eager or not, or whether they're eager or not, you know, like, it isn't like, it's not a, hey, we're chatting around the table and deciding whether or not we're eager. It's like, eager, we're going to roll to see what it is. That is in the same category of mechanics as something like a charm spell. However, part of what those are serving in this game is this kind of, like, fetish inclusive world. And to be fetish inclusive involves sometimes having things that are presented as non-consensual, you know, like, that is a realm of fetish. Right. So, like, the charm spell within fetish realms is, like, that's existing there because a lot of people who are having conversations about, like, wanting to get their kinky sexy thing on, the thing that is appealing to them is, oh no, I wasn't in control because a sexy wizard or whatever, you know, like, there, it is serving a fetish or a desire or some kind of, like, mind space, which I think is true of all role-playing games.
Do NPCs have charm spells?
I think there is, like, some evil charm spell folks at the back. Although there is a really interesting thing where there's a lot of, like, weird horror shit at the back, which is also cool. Because we have, like, sexy body stuff, and then we get into
evil. The monster designs are so creepy and cool. Mm-hmm. Again, like, sort of Morrowind adjacent, but not directly stealing from them. Like, yeah.
Well, and, like, what's interesting is there is a little bit of divide between the sexy stuff and the non-sexy stuff. Like, there is a little bit of divide between, like, here's a bunch of really evil creatures, and there's not really a way to sexually interact with the really evil creatures.
Right.
And I think that is intentional.
I did find the Rancid Angler, which does have a Song of Subjugation, which is a song bait.
Well, and, like, some of the traps melody. Even, right? Yes, like, there's traps that are tentacle pits that very explicitly say they will go for whatever orifice is available. And so there is, like, there is non-consent in, like, there is non-consensual stuff in this game. I think the game does enough scaffolding and, like,
yes,
conversation to, like, allow that to be a play space, right?
If you have read this book and agreed to play this game with some people
and had a conversation about lewd levels and
right, like, that enters into the realm of you have consented to this. Like, I'm not gonna say there aren't situations where someone could be pressured to playing this game non-consensually and get into the stuff, but the rules themselves, the way they're written, front loads all those things that could happen. And so by the time you reach those traps or whatever, I think you know that those are possibilities.
Yes. And I do think that, like, the way, even the way that the non-consensual elements of the book, or the ones that I can remember 169 pages in, like this, I'm sure there are also things that I'm not going to remember. So if I'm misremembering, then apologies, but they are in the service of fun. So the, something like the tentacle trap is not, I'm having a hard time figuring out the correct words. Often my problem with how these things manifest in D&D, or how they, like things like the charm spell or seduction or love priest or whatever, is that people who are using them are often using them to enforce power over, like fictionally power over, in this weird, like, I don't know, in not intent to traumatize, but like there is a, why is this so hard? There is like a, it is not, hey, isn't this so funny? Because we've entered into this world where sex is largely funny and only for pleasure. And so the side effect of hitting a tentacle trap,
the phalangus,
is
bit.
Hilarity and, well, pleasure, and she just says, right? Like pleasure
causes
is
the filthy status
here.
Effect and dehydration.
Yes. And I think there's like another one. The Mimic Knight is the other. I love the Mimic Knight, which is effectively
that's one
mechs.
That you can even like take agency over and become the pilot of. It's like a weird sex mech.
Yeah, it's a weird sex mech because mimics are full of tentacles, and it's, so it's like a living suit of armor that is full of tentacles that you pilot via, you know, letting it into all of your body parts. And you like leave with, you think you leave with the horny condition? Like if you make it out?
Yes. Yeah.
You're sex crazed or whatever. The pilot is also sex crazed, something like that. And there's just something different. I don't know what I'm trying to say succinctly, but there's something different for me between the intent to make pleasure happen in this game, like the outcome being your character is overwhelmed by pleasure.
Yeah.
Versus the way that it feels like it always comes up in D&D, where it's like you are in a weakened power position.
Right.
I'm going to take advantage of you in this weakened power position.
Well, and for me, another part of this game is there's all sorts of weird sex stuff going on in this game. And you know it when you're going into this game, hopefully. In D&D, there's not a lot of weird sex stuff on the surface.
No,
it's, and so to then like introduce it at some point is like, oh, wait a second, that's not what we were going for. And so this game, in portraying the possibility of a variety of sexual acts, to have one that's kind of weird or negative is just like, well, that's just one of many possibilities in this horny world I'm adventuring in.
I think because most mechanics in D&D and games adjacent to it are about different ways you can cause harm, a lot of the control or sex things that come into them end up being about how you cause harm, like fitting into that overwhelming statement, like that overarching design ethos of things like D&D. And so it's like the charm spell is a shortcut to causing harm. You are charming someone usually because you're going to like do something they don't otherwise want to do, as opposed to I'm playing the weird little sexy game where probably I want to get tentacle fucked at some point. And so the fact that you threw a trap out there that makes me get tentacle fucked and then I run away slimy is like, right. They're very different. It's just such a different context for those things.
Yeah.
If you are anti-tentacle, this is not, if you don't want a tentacle in an orifice, I don't think this is the game for you.
Right. And if you don't want to get into weird sex situations, this isn't the game for you. But hopefully the game lets you know ahead of time that that's what's on the table. Mm-hmm. And you can just be like, oh, cool, not for me. And then you can still respect the downtime actions, which are eminently stealable if you are a game designer.
Also the bad guy design.
The creature design is like, there's so much in here for anyone working on games. And so this is the other topic that I wanted to discuss, was like, how many other games like this are out there? Or what other kind of weird fringe to us in the maybe mainstream RPG community, how many other fringe communities are putting out amazing role-playing games that are just like, this is actually for, you know, this is my... I work in a hospital and I have created this role-playing game to train people about end of life, whatever. It's an amazing role-playing game, but it will never be seen by role-playing game people. Like, I think I've mentioned it on the podcast before, but like in the 90s and early 2000s, when web comics became a thing, like before that, it was sort of conceivable that someone could be a comic book expert and know about most comics. And then after that, it was like, oh, there's YA comics, there's web comics, there's mainstream publishers doing comics, there's all this other stuff. You will never be an expert on comics. Mm-hmm. And so with this game, I'm like, how many amazing games are out there that we will just never see? And like, I think we even run into this with like Nordic LARP stuff. Like those people have been doing academic level work about gaming for 20, 30 years now. And we barely see it here in the US and Canada.
So, yeah, there's a lot of people that think that video games and role-playing games are like a new area of study and scholarship or whatever. What? And I just want to be like, it's old as shit. It is older than every single person who claims that they are new to it, right? Like it is older than I am for sure. And like it, I think it's a necessity of capitalism that people are trying to like pretend that things are new or big or that they're experts, right? Like expertise is a scourge. Unless you're like a doctor.
Right.
And then I would like you to be a little bit of an expert.
Expertise can be nice. It can be nice to have a friend that always knows a thing to recommend to you. But when that friend is like, actually, your opinion on this is bad because I'm the expert. Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's also just like usually a lie. But
right. But yeah, it's nice to have a well of information that you can access.
Oh, sure. I just mean that like most experts that I have ever spoken to, like legitimate card carrying, whatever, accredited experts, like the more you look into something, the more you learn you don't know about something. And that is usually the actual like cornerstone of people who are really deep into something, is acknowledging that they don't know. There is so much that they don't know that will forever...
Shout out to librarians that are experts in accessing information and will help you access whatever information you want.
But anybody who pretends that a thing is simple is selling you something. But yeah, I do think that about like games quite frequently, because I think while they become more expansive communities, they're also extremely insular, and which is what we see between like OSR versus trad versus story or whatever, right? It's like, well, yeah, we're all in this like tiny little conversation between 1,000 people. And what, like the fact that role-playing games don't frequently speak to LARP is very funny to me, you know, like I don't like a lot of LARPs. I find it uncomfortable. I've said it a million times, but the idea that these two things that are so close are not usually in conversation. When we are in this indie scene and we're designing role-playing games, I hear people talk about how they were inspired by Into the Odd every day, by Mothership every day. Ask those same people to name 4 LARPs and they can't, you know? And it's like, they can name 700 OSR games, but not 3 non-OSR games, you know? And I do think it's kind of interesting. I think it diminishes actually our creative output quite a bit. That's just me being kind of like, I think we would be a better community for more inclusions of things like Vice and Violence or Nordic LARP or whatever it is. And we certainly would be better creatives. The reason that we're stuck in this loop of like having the same game 700 times is because people are looking at the same game 700 times. Which is funny because this game has a lot of the trappings of all of those things. It's just presented in a nice way.
Well, but it's also like it feels so free to like mix and match these things without declaring allegiance to basic expert Dungeons and Dragons or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, and because it does,
I think
like
about
it,
to like text-based role playing, like forum role playing or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's some aspect of like, how is this remembered? How is it archived? How are people getting access to it? I think a lot of people making indie games right now came up on like Neopet forums or something like that, doing play by post, and that was like a Calvin Ball thing that grew in its own environment, kind of separate from a lot of stuff. And it's hard to turn into like numbers or inspirations, right? Hard to archive, hard to historicize.
And yeah, so, it's also like the question of access is ever present, right? Like this is a little bit like the, you just posted in the Discord a top 50 games of a YouTuber that you like. That's not, I'm not digging that. It's just, and there was a comment. I made a comment about how like,
and Aaron Lynn,
gamers don't see mobile games, which is like a studied phenomenon, right? This isn't like being flippant, whatever. It is like when you are also expected to come home and make dinner for your family, as opposed to being the one who isn't expected to come home and make dinner for your family, you have more time to play video games that sit on a console or a PC, right?
Yeah. And so also, for most of my life, it's been easier to access consoles and computers than it has been a cell phone with a touchscreen. And so like, yeah, these ideas of access, and, you know, I think in countries other than the United States, it has been more normal to get phones because you might not have access to a computer. And so you get a phone that serves as a lot of these things. And in the US, like, companies make it really hard to just jump from phone to phone or grab a new phone or whatever, because they want to like keep you trapped in contracts and stuff. Like, it is such an interesting thing. And that's, I think, adjacent to what I was thinking about with like forums. Like, if you weren't on the internet at a certain time, the idea that you can go to a forum and pretend to be a character and type out your actions is like probably kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, and it's things like, and those things are very gendered and very classed and very like about marginalization. Like, I think about, you know, some students were commenting to me the other day about how we were just having a little chat about how weird it is to be somebody who's not a dude playing an online game like Call of Duty or Apex, because you show up in the voice chat and everybody's like, is that a woman? And it like every single like not cis dude gamer that I know has experienced this moment of saying like hello in a voice chat, and then everybody being like, a woman is present. And you're like, well, of course, I'm not going to play this game again. You know, like there's so much of it that is like, when we think about best of, when we think about forms, when we think about like things that are understood as commonplace or like dominant structures. When I say forms, I mean like dominant forms, like formal presentations, right, of like systems. The reason these things are the most popular is directly relative to who sits at the top of our food chain, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Into the Odd isn't the best game that's ever existed. Into the Odd is a good game. I'm not saying it's a bad game. Yeah. I'm saying its popularity is directly relative to who made it, where they come from, what their position on the internet is, and how comfortably they can move between spaces and social circles, right?
Chris has put a ton of work into the Odd. You cannot dispute that. But like,
so have a bunch of women whose names we don't know.
Exactly. Why does he have time to put that work into it? Yeah. Or why does he have time? Why does he have the ability to put that time into it? And none of this is like,
it's not about him specifically. It's just that's just an example.
Right. What like, are the systemic structures that are in place? And, you know, some people take advantage of those systemic structures actively and can work hard within them. Other people can take advantage of them passively and just reap the benefits without, you know, it is a complicated thing, but it is always very important to like consider
why
people have access to these things and who is keeping access from things.
Which is kind of interesting in relation to this game, because this is a game that lives because of Patreon, right? Mm-hmm. Which like,
what, it's like $14,000 a month Canadian this person is getting.
I think it's 11 or something. It's fucking stupid. It's a stupid amount of money. But
also good job.
Yeah. I'm glad that money's going there, whatever. But it is interesting to me to think about Patreon, because Patreon was pitched as this kind of alternate. And I think people have kind of lost sight of what the value of Patreon is. We have one. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to do that thing that every podcast does.
I'm going to do it at the end.
I know. But the idea for me that is literally how we counter these structures. I'm not saying Patreon, the corporation, counters those structures. But if I can put my money in someone's pocket, if I can put my money directly into somebody's pocket in a stable way, that is so much more value than backing their Kickstarter. Yeah. And I think that we have lost sight in RPGs about, like, not lost sight, maybe we never had that sight, you know, like, I think we generally are moving towards RPGs, indie RPGs only functioning within capitalist structures, and not focusing enough on how we can counter those. And not even indie RPGs, but indie video games, like everything that I think that if we care about equality and equity in any way, shape or form, we have to think about alternate pathways. And I do think that Patreon still functions as an alternate pathway, even if there is an evil corporation involved, you know?
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me because there is also this perception about games that deal with sex that they aren't viable. And you could change sex here to any kind of topic, you know? Like, this is, sex is shorthand for any marginal right. topic, right? What
historical
is considered niche.
Historical non-European RPGs are not viable.
If it doesn't align with the morality of the dominant culture or whatever, right? Like, any of these things can be substituted for sex here. And I think, you know, what this game does a really good job of exemplifying is both that you can make a phenomenal RPG that isn't just, it's not like, it's not a sex RPG, you know what I mean? Like, in that way that I'm like, I don't want to be a trans artist or whatever. I actually don't mind being a trans artist, but I think you always have that when you're a marginalized person, there is always that process of like, I don't want to be insert identity artist or whatever, or just that, right? I don't want to be just a trans artist. And I think this game is like, it's not just a sex game. It's also extremely viable in a sustainable way. This game is more sustainable than literally any other game that I know of, right? Like, $11,000 a month directly into the creator's pocket means that this game is both more profitable, but I'm less concerned about the peaks of profit and more about this creator has the most sustainable career in games that I have seen of any individual, including the $1 million Kickstarters, because the $1 million Kickstarters, as we keep seeing, fail, like the company shut down, everybody gets chased on the internet, right?
Minus,
like,
it's Kickstarter, not like fees, minus printing fees, minus shipping upcharges.
Yeah, and then you fuck up your deliveries and nobody's going to support your next game, or because you've put yourself in this extremely high stress fight or flight situation, you know, and as opposed to saying, I just want to be a creator who pays my bills, please support my Patreon. You know, I have the best product in the entire world, which, like, sure, sometimes I want to see the best product in the entire world. I just think that, like, we do need to be, I think it's interesting as a counterpoint to a lot of those ideas about, like, how do you make your game popular on Kickstarter? How do you sell whatever? How do you become a independent creator in the scene? How do you find sustainability? All of these things, people say a lot of things without backing them up with examples. And I'm like, I mean, this person has a lot of internet following, so that's what they're creating on there. But I'm sure they developed it by sticking to their weird little thing for a long period of time.
You should still go to cloudempress.com.
Yes, you absolutely should. I know why we're all doing all these things. Right. I may run a Kickstarter again, you know, like, it's, I not would like rather,
if someone has money, if someone is middle class, upper middle class, whatever, and can afford to give me $5 a month for 2 years versus $25 for my Kickstarter, I want the $5 a month for 2 years.
Yeah.
It's more money over time. It might not, you know.
Even if it's the same money over time.
Right.
Regular money is better.
Yeah.
Than an influx.
It allows me to plan for costs in a way that, yeah.
Yeah, we are also weak humans. It's not like our willpowers are not very good. It's weak. Like, oh, I have $400 in my bank account versus I have $400 over the next year. It's like, those are, I will make different choices, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I do think it's just, like, interesting to have these things that kind of sit in this, what is perceived socially as niche, and then in actuality is, like, the most popular RPG we've probably talked about on this show.
Right.
You know, like that's like, you're like, sex, I don't want to listen to that. That's weird. Only weird other people do this. And I'm like, literally the most popular game that we have talked about on the show, probably. I can't even back that up. Like, we've talked about D&D, so that's not true. But barring D&D.
Probably the most purchased and file opened RPGs.
Yeah, there are like 4,600 people every month who support this. That's a lot of people.
And it's good.
Yeah. I mean, I know why, right? Like, it's very good. It's very good. It's very beautiful. It's very well designed and well considered. And because it has that longevity, it also can change and react to its player responses, right? Like, it can, it probably, I'm sure, I haven't been aware of this for its entire existence, but I'm sure that it is getting only better over time because this person gets to go back to it 6 months later.
Yeah, we did announce like, oh, we're doing an episode on this in our Discord a while back. And I think someone did say like, oh, I saw this earlier and I'm looking at it now and they have made a lot of changes based on like queer inclusion and stuff like that. And to me, this reads as a pretty queer game. Just as far as like anyone can get milk boobs. That's the definition of queer for me. Always has been.
God, I really do not ever want to have milk boobs again.
No, but I want anyone that wants to have milk boobs to be able to have milk boobs.
I am pro milk boobs elsewhere.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because there is a gender binary in the game.
There is a gender binary. That a lot of the race descriptions are like the males are like this, the females are like this.
Is it a gender binary or is it a bio binary? I think it might be. Because I was thinking about this and I was like, why is this different? Like, it's still very, which is funny because they use like they, them a lot in the book. Like, it's not like, so that the, there is within the world non-binariness.
Yes.
But the physical descriptions also include like male and female or like male dwarves or female dwarves or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that is devoid of like biological sex characteristics.
Yeah.
You know, like there's no connection between maleness and femaleness with boobs, which I think is funny. Like there, I mean, there's a soft connection, but there's no explicit, discrete.
You are given a baseline. Once the game actually starts, I think you are expected to be growing and shifting and changing in any number of ways. And you are given the tools to have agency over that. And I mentioned it before, like the porn thing about, oh, in porn, porn takes place in a world where risk of pregnancy is not a factor. Venereal diseases are not a factor. That's true of this game as well. Like as much as it's about the different kinds of sex you can have and, oh, I've accidentally been having sex right now. I did not see any rules about getting pregnant and I did not see anything about diseases, sexually transmitted diseases. Which is just, to me, such an invitation to have sex and engage with it. Like when I was mentioning the old games, the old sex games, all of those come with like, if you are a woman, you must roll a D20 and on this or less, you become pregnant. And at 3 months, that affects your stats this way. And at 6 months, blah, blah, blah. And it's terrible.
Yeah.
It's awful every single time. This game like preserves the fun of sex without any of that stuff. I was scrolling up because I was on the penis trap page and I was like, I've looked at this for 20 minutes now. I want to scroll up. I also did just get to the mounted combat page, which
where
is
the
like,
person's just mounting a big hunky guy.
Here are all the ways to ride your horse or whatever. Also, you can just mount someone with 3 higher brawn than you. So if you have 1 brawn, you can get on a big old fellow with 4 brawn and treat them as a mount.
Which is
and
what the
is
art
a beautiful
accompanying
picture
that picture
of this little person drinking a steaming pot of coffee and eating a biscotte, it looks like, sitting on this big hunky guy with red hair.
Who really seems good. To only have like 1 leg? I don't know.
No, he's walking. He's
he looks like a mermaid. There's no separation in his pants.
You're right.
He looks. He has a fishtail.
What is going on here?
Fishtail.
I thought he had 2 legs, but 1 is a big sword.
The other is his dick. There's not like
you do see his dick very prominently there as well.
But anyway, yeah, it's really great.
It's
there's also like I think it's that it's very clear that bodies are just meant to be vessels for pleasure. And so if the vessel for pleasure is I would like to grow milk boobs and also the hugest dick in existence, then that's what it is today. You know, like that's none of this is meant to be fixed or indicative of who you are or what your role is, which I think is the important part there.
Yes. Yeah.
It's just, do you want to have some extra holes today? Great. Do it. Do you want to?
Yeah.
Do you want to?
Do you want to have every possible erogenous zone in the human experience? We have ways to do that as well.
Yeah. This is, I just flipped to the living armor page, which feels like the, if you're going to have living armor, you might want every possible orifice because it's getting up in there.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's really good. Oh, human. We didn't talk about humans. Humans are very funny in this game. Humans are a matriarchal race. They have harems of men.
I forgot about this.
It's just like, I think a problem, quote unquote, in fantasy RPGs is like, what sets humans apart? And then what does that mean for non-humans? And in this, they're very much like, no, humans are this weird specific thing that are even not necessarily related to humans in our real world. They trade sons among clans to add to the firstborn's harem. Daughters can refuse a lesser harem and live a life of perpetual pregnancy and are often sent to work to earn jade out on their own before roving families. You know, so I guess they do mention pregnancy, but there's no... I don't know. I feel like we're in the weeds.
Yeah, there's just something. I don't. Maybe we're not particularly capable of articulating whatever it is that really fundamentally changes how this hits, right? Because that's really all it is. It's like you read a bunch of stuff, and there is some innate part of you that is like, "This feels fucking horrible." And sometimes we're very good. Like sometimes you're capable of saying exactly why it feels fucking horrible, and sometimes you are not. And maybe it is that just that like, Aaron and I are down for the weird thing that's being presented here. And I think it is just like being so explicit and so playful and that like the freedom that is associated with that feels, yeah, it just feels freeing. Like it feels like, sure, we can do all this. I really wish, and I've said this a million times, but I really wish that a lot of other games would take some cues from the games that they think are too explicitly sexual. Because one of the things that most of the games that we're probably going to talk about that are too explicitly sexual do is let people not be contained by their body or gender, right? Like this is because these things, there is an explicit queerness to so many of these games, and that queerness is carried through the relationships to bodies and sex, and so many people try and make their games queer friendly while still being really prudish, and I'm not really sure that you can do those things, you know. And that, like, that's my Wizards problem. It's like Wizards of the Coast does not care for queer people.
Say,
well, Wizards in general.
That was my wizard character's problem. I played a wizard once who had this big problem.
Wizards are pointed out as weird little freaks in this book 700 times.
Yeah. Just these pale weaklings.
So many that like really, really, really like tentacles. There's a lot.
Also, yeah. I'm still on the human page.
Yeah. Get it.
You pick human or you roll human because you don't pick your race. You roll for it. And then you roll these two traits. And so you roll 2d20 twice. You might get, I was the favorite male in my wife's harem, allegedly. And then you might also get, I'm a failed dairy girl. My tits are huge and I have cow ears but couldn't keep quota. Or you might get, I can suck my own cock. Like,
I like the idea that you can get, I am a failed dairy girl and I can suck my own cock.
Yeah, exactly. Like it introduces these baselines for biological whatever. But then, as I said, there's like so many ways to undermine it accidentally or on purpose. It's just cool. It's a cool game.
Also, there's just, as a fat person, there's something. There's not like a lot of fatness in this game, but there's also not a lot of thinness in the way that a lot of games do. But everybody's described as really jiggly. And I appreciate it. There's like a real focus on jiggliness, because we all know that jiggliness is where the erotics live. But the because even the gods are like, everybody's a little bit more jiggly than before. There's this weird, I don't know. I appreciate
again,
it.
Again, like, yeah.
One of the human traits is also goblins love my belly, which I just feel like is very, it's a very, even though that doesn't necessarily imply a fat character, it's a very like.
You wouldn't call someone with an any stomach. What would you?
What's, yeah, you, abs ain't a belly on right, some level. You know, exactly. Like there's this like, yeah. It's a nice, there are nice little moments like that all through the book, which I think is why the overwhelming feeling is of positivity. I would play this lewd level one or two. Nope.
Yeah.
I would play this lewd level one. Easy peasy. Anybody I would play a game with, I would play lewd level one. I would play lewd level two with a very select group of people whom I thought it would be fun to talk about, I don't know, tentacles and tits with.
And dairy girls. And
dairy girls. And I would play lewd level two or three online. Like only by online. Text. I could only envision playing lewd level three via text, just because I like am not that inventive. Like I am not a person who wants to like.
It does feel difficult on the spot to come up with sexual stuff without being engaged in the sexual acts, which I don't mean as people shouldn't be able to or whatever, but I just mean like in our pretty prudish North American society, you are usually only called upon to come up with sexual ideas during the sexual act. And so
it's also just like not my specialty. Would I like pay to watch an actual play of a bunch of people actually playing lewd level 3? 100%. 100%. I would play a lot of money to watch an actual play of people playing this game at any lewd level, really, actually would be fucking great. Oh, it's so good. All the art's so joyous. Also, it's free. What a wild world we live in, where the best game is both making the most money, providing the most stability, and also is free. All these things are true.
Yeah. Is that it? Let's end on this positive note.
I don't think there's no negative note about this game. There's not. I mean, I'm sure there is, but I'm not going to hunt for it.
Well, I just, you know, we were exploring for a while. We were confused. We weren't sure.
I don't. This might be the height of the sex games. I do think it is going to be hard to find a sex game that we both have this much fun reading again. Part of it is just that, like, there's so much game stuff. Like, it helps you generate a dungeon. It helps you, you know, like, it has all this stuff for how you get quests. You can get quests in an inn, but if you go to a brothel, it's faster and they might be a little bit saucier. Like, there's just all this.
Right at the inn, you have to, like, arm wrestle and do drinking contests to pass the time until someone approaches you with a quest. And that means you might like lose some money or whatever. Yeah, it's really good.
You might
it's
get drunk.
It's a great game, mechanically. There is, like, if someone wanted to be a true prude about this, you could strip it out and do an SRD kind of thing with it. I would be pissed if someone did that without this person's permission. But, like, if you play D&D, you could look at this and I think get something out of it. That's it. We're done. I already read a quote. We are at Patreon, patreon.com/RTFMcast. I'm losing hours. The place I work is closing. My car is gone.
I hate these things.
I don't want to be sad, but like, you know, again, if you are of a financial class that you can back this, that would be great. Patreon.
Also,
we'll be diving into Dune. We're diving into Dune.
I was like, are we going to say it? Are we going to say it out loud? We are doing a new thing for the Patreon that we are in the process of doing, because it turns out when you read real books, they're longer than these fake ass game books we've been reading. And maybe we're going to deep dive Dune, which I think is going to be very interesting and fun and hilarious.
That's the title of it. Triple D, deep dive Dune.
Lol. But we're also kind of trialing it out maybe as like a different podcast format for us to like maybe dig into. This might be, we might.
Right, like other media, non-game media.
Maybe just books. We might even just do a book thing. Both of us kind of want to continue to chat about, like, culture and politics and identity and nerd things, but not always have it be centered in games.
And we also want to have more indie and zine games in the main feed so that hopefully you go and engage with them.
Yes, you do have to. Currently, you do have to pay us to get to listen to us talk about Dune.
Right. I will never recommend Dune to anyone.
I think I might. But I don't know. But, you know, with an asterisk, right. We're going to get deep into it. We have committed to the first three Dune books. I have committed to the first three Dune books, which means we're going to have multiple episodes about Dune. But we might even get farther than that because Aaron has informed me that after that, they get into the weird sex stuff. So
the weirdest sex stuff in all the Dune books.
So that will be coming soon, which means that you can continue to join. You can continue to support our Patreon just because you like us and you want this podcast to survive. You can also join the Patreon because you want to hear more about us talking about Dune, which may or may not involve some games. I'm going to release the Ashcan for my Dune game on the Patreon.
Oh, yeah. My Dune game's going only on the Patreon feed and then in the physical printing. I'm printing some games soon.
Yes.
We also have a Discord. Link is in the episode description. We mentioned it multiple times this episode, like people saying smart things in our Discord about mobile games and the genderedness of best games and stuff like that. Like, people are cool. And no and. I'm tired.
No and.
I don't know.
It's good.
I walked go like read 6 miles
today. Go read this game.
Yeah, go get it. And then come talk to us about it in Discord.
There's so much that we didn't cover, like the Kraken ships. Go find the Kraken ships and then find us in the Discord. And it'll be great. It's a great time. You will enjoy yourself, most likely.
I once had sex with a very accommodating human. That's a quote.
Great.
From the centaurs.
Great. Forever. Goodbye.